Vanakshya Tvam Sambandhayastu Kalpitaha Itam Vakyai Sadatanam Sandhanam Shravanam Bhavet Yuktya Sambhavitatvanu Sandhanam Mananam Tutat Tavyam Nirvichikitserte Chetasasthapitasyaya Ekatanatvamedardhi Nidhiya samamuchyate Yatradhyane paityajya Ramadhyayarkagocharam Nivatadipavachyattam Samadhyaravidhiyate Virpitayastu tadanim abhyataha agocharaha Smaranatanumiyante yuktidasya samuttita Vrittina manuvrittistu Prayatna tatamadapi Arshita sakrita vyasa Samskara sachivadbhavet Yathadipo nivasastha Ityadi viramekada Bhagavanimam nevartam Arjunaya nyarupaya Anadha viha samsare Samchitta karma kotayaha Vaneva viryam yanti Shuddho dharmo vivardhate Dharma megamam prahu Samadhim yoga vittamaha Varshate sayato dharma
Take some fine balloons.
Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvi navadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Let's do that first, these 30 verses, 61,
62, 63. Amuna vasana jale.
Nishesham pravilapite.
Nishesham pravilapite.
Samulon mulit mulite punya
Samulam mulite punya.
Papa ke karma sanchaye.
Papa ke karma sanchaye.
Vakyam apratipaddham.
Vakyam apratipaddham.
Vakyam apratipaddham sat.
Vakyam apratipaddham sat.
Prak parokshava bhasite.
Prak parokshava bhasite.
Karamalakavat bodham.
Karamalakavat bodham.
Aparoksham prasuyate.
Aparoksham prasuyate.
Paroksham brahma vijnanam.
Paroksham brahma vijnanam.
Shabdam deshika purvakam.
Shabdam deshika purvakam.
Buddhi purvakritam papam.
Buddhi purvakritam papam.
Krishnam dahati panhivat.
Krishnam dahati panhivat.
Amuna. Vasana jale.
Vasana jale.
Nishesham.
Nishesham.
Pravilapite.
Pravilapite.
Samula.
Samula.
Unmulite.
Unmulite.
Punya.
Punya.
Papa kye.
Papa kye.
Punya. Papa akye.
Punya. Papa akye.
Karma sanchaye.
Karma sanchaye.
And the second part of this verse is the next verse. This won't be a sentence. We need to have the next verse also to complete the sentence. Mm-hmm. So let's do that. Repeat after me. So we can just go through it. Vakyam.
Vakyam.
Apratibaddham.
Apratibaddham.
Sat.
Sat.
Prak.
Prak.
Paroksha.
Paroksha.
Avabhasite.
Avabhasite.
Kara.
Kara.
Amalika.
Amalika.
Vat. So you could say Amalika Vat. Amala. Amalika Vat.
Amalika Vat.
Buddham.
Buddham.
Aparoksham.
Aparoksham.
Prasuyate.
Prasuyate.
Okay. So the first 61 is a clause. And then the sentence is in 62. It says the first half is a clause. So, amuna means samadhina. By samadhi, and you'll see we're going to be looking at both savikalpa samadhi and nirvikalpa samadhi. So just now, just general samadhi. So by means of samadhi, vasana jale, nishesham pravilapite. So these are all in the locative, so to speak. So what this, except for like the adverbs. So what this says is, by samadhi, by means of samadhi, the vasana jala. Vasana means all of the bad habits that we picked up through ajnana. Right. Mm-hmm. So all of these samskaras that we have that are based in ajnana. The commentator says this vasana jala is the, for instance, he lists them, the ahankara, that's a samskara, take it for granted, the ahankara, the mamakara, this is mine, I am this, this is mine, I am this, the kartritva, that kartritva, that sense of doership. And so all of these identifications that are caused by ajnana. And also you can include in that, in this vasana jala. Vasana, he's including all of these types of vrittis that are ajnana born. But you can go on. you can say the raga dvesha, you know. You could say that there's ajnanam, which brings about kama, desire, which brings about krodha. So sometimes you'll look at the vasana jala as ajnana, kama, krodha. If there wasn't ajnanam there, there wouldn't be desire. And then, of course, we can just kind of bypass the desires that are nicely fulfilled and don't cause any problem for us. But if a desire is not fulfilled, the one feeling, which really exemplifies a basket of feelings, they say, is krodha. Because krodha includes like frustration and irritation and anger and then all of these kind of negative spectrum that will arise because a desire, a raga, is not fulfilled. And so those are all samskaras that are born tendencies, you know, they're just abiding there waiting to come up. You know, so they're called like unconscious tendencies, we say, samskaras, that are waiting there to be triggered, that are all born of ajnanam. So these vasanas are this kind of unconscious triggers waiting to happen. But all those unconscious triggers, you have to realize, are really a product of self-ignorance. In fact, the whole raga dvesha, the whole negative spectrum of emotions and the hurts and pains that we feel are really due to the projection of on the ananda swarupa of my own nature onto something. And that something can be anything. And it can be anything external or internal. It can be relational. It often is relational. You know, what I want out of a relationship. And there could be all kinds of little subtle things, little hurts and pains. All of these raga dveshas usually also triggering something deeper in the unconscious, you know. If it's just, you know, if we're just in samsara without a loaded unconscious, then we still get irritated when our desires aren't fulfilled. But those irritations or those unfulfilled desires don't act as a trigger, you know, for deeper hurts. And those deeper hurts are which really get in, they're in the unconscious, and the unconscious is embodied. You think of it like that. That's why when some of these things are triggered, they're located in your body, and you can't, you know, you have to have some techniques to wash it out of the body. Otherwise it just kind of stays there and you have to wait for it to wear off. So all of these vasanas, this whole jala means like a net, you know, a big net filled with vasanas, okay, these samskaras. So it's by samadhi, and we'll see, and as the verses come, both savikalpa and nirvikalpa, okay. So by samadhi, when this net full of vasanas, nisheshem pravilapite, as completely resolved, completely destroyed, completely dissolved, okay? So in this whole net of vasanas is completely nisheshem. Nisheshem means they're like a remainder or something left over. Nisheshem, that nish negates. So all of those vasanas, when they are destroyed without anything left, and samula unmilita punya papa ke karma sanchiye. So it's reading backwards. And when all the whole collection, like when we say the sanchita karmas, sanchiye is the same. We're not just talking about sanchita karmas here, though. Sanchita means a collection. Sanchiye is a collection. So when the whole group of karmas, punya papa ke, which we call punya and papa, so in all of these karmas, the whole collection of karmas that are known as punya and papa, when those are, it's interesting that they, Vidyaranya uses this word, he says, samula, which means together with their root, together with their cause. Mula means like a root, or the cause of something. So when you say the sa-mulam, it means saha-mulam, together with the cause. Unmilite means when those are pulled up. Like say if you have a plant and the plant goes, the roots go down, and it's a weed, so you think, I don't want the weed, poor thing. I don't want the weed in my garden. So I go down and I pull up the weed, but I have to get the root also. Right? Or that'll just grow right back. So I'm able to when the whole all of these karmas, all of these punya and papas together with their root, causal root, you know, have been destroyed, then what? So this is all locatives. So it says, so just to go over this verse again, Namunam, by the samadhi, by means of samadhi, when the whole group of vasanas, samskaras, like the ahankara and the mamakara and the kartritvam and the absolute identification with the upadis, all of these type of things, when they are completely dissolved without any remainder, because dissolved into mitya, it's not like they're just going to gain knowledge and then just dissolving. They dissolve into the reality, that tattva, giving the reality to that, the satyam, that is completely gone. Then samula unmilite punya papakye karma sanchaye, and when all of the sanchita karmas, all of the karmas, the whole collection of karmas that are in the form of punya and papa, so those are going to be sanchita karmas waiting to fructify. Right. So when all of those sanchita karmas, along with their cause, the ajnanam, has been pulled up, then he says, vakyam apratibaddham sat prak paroksha avabhasite kara amalakavat bodha bodham aparoksham prasuyate. Okay, there's, let me just translate the whole thing and then we have to talk at one line is different from the, there's a growth. Okay. So, vakyam, apratibaddham. When we're talking about the vakyam, we're talking about the mahavakya, tattvamasi. So, when that mahavakya, apratibaddham sat, having no pratibandhakas, no obstruction. So we'll talk about that in a second. There's different types of obstructions. So when the Mahavakya, which is apratibaddham, unbound, unobstructed, being unobstructed, prak paroksha avabhasite. So it says, initially that Mahavakya is going to shine, of avabhasate, that mahavakya will shine as as initially as paroksha. Paroksha, and now we have to, he's using paroksha differently here. You know, paroksha means as like indirect knowledge. So that's what it says, we'll have to unfold it. So vakyam, so the vakya, which is now not obstructed, has the mahavakya that's not obstructed, being not obstructed, it at first shines as aparoksha, as indirect. And it says, kara amalakavat bodham aparoksham prasuyate. Then, after, later, it shines as o aparoksham bodham aparoksham prasuyate. That knowledge, Pasuyate means it becomes or it is born or it gains the stature of, it turns into a paroksham. That paroksha, as though indirect, even though it's coming from the guru, it's being taught by the guru, it's being taught as a pramana, but you don't quite get it. After some time, then that very knowledge becomes a paroksha. And he gives a famous example for that. The aparoksha is like in the palm of your hand, an amalaka fruit. An amalaka fruit is like a little round fruit, like this, that's sitting at the palm of your hand. And so when you look at that, when you look at that amalaka, you can see all around it. So that means when this knowledge, you can see completely when you look at it, the vision is complete, there's no doubt, there's no misapprehension, there's no doubts at all. You see it as a whole, you know. You see, like for instance, just to give an example, when we go through the Panchikarana, this process of manifestation, there are all of these parts, you know. There's all of these steps that you have to hold in your mind. There's a lot to hold there. Maybe there's, you know, 30 or 40 different things that have to be held in your mind in order to really see it, see the whole thing. So when you're first studying it, first learning it, you can only hold little parts here and there, and then you forget the parts that you just learned. And so it's not like an amalaka fruit in your hand. But once you have studied it and been with it, and teaching is a good way to learn it, and taught it and whatnot, then that whole chart, that whole process of manifestation of the creation is like an amalaka fruit in your hand. All of the parts are there together. And so like that, this whole knowledge at some point, because there's not many parts in reference to yourself, just to me, there's only one thing there. So that it's a matter of recognition. But of course, in that process of recognition, there are many, many things that yourself is identified with, you know, and many subtle things also, and many kind of habitual ways of being that is brought about by that ignorance. And so to be able to gain the whole picture even of your own nature, there's a lot of viveka that has to take place there, differentiating yourself from the things that you've taken yourself to be. Differentiating the ananda of the self from the ananda that I've projected on the world and running after. So there's many, many different parts. And so those parts all have to become clear, like the amalaka fruit. And then it's not one thing. It's basically satyam mitya. Those two words are enough. Satyam mitya. Or aham brahmasmi, or I am Ishwar. That's absolutely enough. But initially, it's certainly not enough. There are many, many words and many vivekas and many teaching methodologies that we have to go through before it's just like an amalaka fruit in my hand. I see the whole thing as one whole, the whole vision as one whole. And until then, there's things that have to be taken care of. So now, when he's using here this bhakyam that it becomes apratibaddham, apratibaddham, the vakyam that is apratibaddham, means that from many different standpoints, there is no, it's sambhavana. It's called asambhavana. Means that there's doubt. Sambhavana means there's clarity. Asambhavana means there's doubt. There's not clarity. So as this teaching is taking place, there's pitfalls, areas where there's not clarity. Like, for instance, one is the asambhavana in reference to the Vedanta as a pramana, as a means of knowledge. The asambhavana is that question, how is that even possible? What do they mean by that? I don't understand how Vedanta can act as a pramana. How could that be true? That's asambhavana. Then it can be asambhavana in reference to the pramaya, in reference to the nature of yourself, and the Mahavakya, how is it really, how could that really be true, that this very personal me, that this self, that they say is me, is the self of the whole creation? That doesn't make sense. That doesn't seem very realistic. So I have an asambhavana there. I have a doubt there. And then I have a doubt, can have a doubt in terms of the antakarana shuddhi. You know, what is that, which I think is a really important doubt, actually, because it's something that needs a lot of understanding. What does it mean to have antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind? What does that mean? Because this whole idea of purity of mind seems way out of reach. You know, I told the story of the autobiography of a yogi, the guy that had to jump off the cliff to kill himself so he could get a better upadhi because he wasn't pure enough. So what on earth does it mean to have antakarana shuddhi? And then for Christians, you have Jesus walking on the water. You have all of these kinds of siddhis that are involved. So when you say antakarana shuddhi, all kinds of siddhis can come up and all types of special experiences. So what exactly is meant by all of these things? These act as pratibandhakas to your knowledge. And so say now, so some of this now is sort of really interesting from Paramarthananda. I really enjoyed what he said here. Say now, some of these asambhavanas, this is impossible, how could this be? So these doubts need to be taken care of, you know. And then what you have then is what he calls here in the Shastra, in the text, the Vakyam, the Mahavakya, is now apratibandham. It's clear. There's no obstructions in terms of these doubts. The vision is clear, okay? First, you kind of understood it as paroksham, but now you see it. It's getting very clear to you. But even though it's clear, it's still on kind of a theoretical. It's still a little bit theoretical, because you will say yourself, "It's clear. I understand, but I don't feel." I don't feel enlightened. I don't know myself. You know. But I don't have any doubts. I don't have any doubts. I'm clear, really. But I feel there's still something wrong. And so those are a different kind of pratibandhaka. Those are a different kind of obstruction. Those type of obstructions we call adrishta. The adrishtas. They're not seen, they're not part of the text, they're not part of the teaching, you know, except to acknowledge them. So that way they're part of the teaching. But for you the teaching is clear, but there's this adrishta obstruction. Like I don't feel I think I'm supposed to feel. You know? I don't feel happy, I don't feel whole. And so it's interesting that these type of pratibandhikas are even this Vidyaranya, I think, was in, I believe it was in the 14th century. I might be wrong. It might be the 16th century. It's quite a while ago. But it's interesting that these things way back then, even before psychology, you know, they were having these problems. And these problems, if you say that adrishta means it has to do with punyapapa, if I said it has to do with punyapapa, how do we operationalize that? What does that really mean? You could say, I'm just making this up, but this is what I would say that would mean, is that because of my karma, which is going to be a mix of punyapapa, I have a particular type of birth with a particular type of parents. And I didn't meet my teacher until I was 20 or whatever, you know. So I had my whole childhood with these particular parents who themselves had, because of their prarabdha karma and their parentage and their situation, they picked up a lot of problems, right? And then they gave birth to you, and then you also had to suffer their problems. And like they had to suffer the problems of their parents. Now sometimes those problems are too much for a child. They're too much. And when they're too much, when the problems are too much, then the child gets a loaded unconscious. You know? Not a simple unconscious. When, for some reason, whatever it is, there's not a good enough mother. A good enough mother gives a lot of leeway there. It's like a good enough friend, a good enough mother, a good enough father, you know, a good enough uncle. Means they're not really a problem. They're not just not perfect beings. They are good enough. That's a big thing. Be able to say, I'm a good enough mother and be happy with that, that's a blessing. And I'm a good enough father and to be happy with it, that is realistic. And it means that child is getting what he or she needs in order to be able, as they grow up, to cope with the world. Kohut, for instance, in self-psychology, the psychologist that I really, really like, he really feels, and the other psychologists do, but he puts it nicely, that as a child is growing up for these first 4 years, say, especially the first 4 years. Jung will say those first 4 years, we spend the rest of our life working out in Jungian psychology. But say in these first 4 years, there will be a lot of bumps along the way, you know, where the mother or father doesn't get it quite right and the child is very, very upset. But the mother or father is there to make amends and be there as the child has the temper tantrum and all of that. The mother or father doesn't just get furious because you're crying and send you off to your room, you know. If you're going to cry, go to your room. Blah, all these horrible things. Horrible for a little tiny child, you know. You're making a scene, you're making us all miserable, go to your room. These kind of things. It's not so uncommon, honestly. It's not so uncommon. But the little tiny baby, you know, those are huge, big, traumatic things, and they're sent off in the middle of their suffering. When they're suffering in the set, in the middle of that, they're sent off into their room to cry and handle it by themselves. And so when that is the case, and if that is kind of the norm because you have a very angry father or you have a negative relationship, parental relationship at home between themselves or whatever it is, there's a lot of these traumas that go on for this little child in the first 4 years who has no way to defend itself or to even have any objectivity, like to be able to say, oh, mommy's just really upset. Let me go to my room and until she calms down. They don't have that. They don't have that buddhi to be able to do that. They just think they've done something terribly wrong and they're completely out of sorts. So what does Bhagavan do to take care of us, you know, when that's what we had to deal with in one way or another? He just goes, stick it in the unconscious, shut the middle door, shut the middle trap really tightly, put some screws in it, keep it away. And you'll actually see, if you've ever had the experience, I have only a couple of times with a little child, and so the mom got really mad at the child. And you can see the child is just kind of devastated. And then all of a sudden, this goes over. And they just go and play. That's Ishwara. That's Ishwara. But that's in there to be dealt with later, if at all. But say we don't ever deal with it or we don't know how to deal with it. Then it's just there for your lifetime, locked up, except that when you get a trigger from somebody outside who looks at you in the same way or said something in a tone that was familiar to some of those traumas, it comes up, it overwhelms the mind, and it lands onto that person, you know. Or sometimes you've experienced it comes up in the one who was that really angry parent, you become that one, and the other person becomes the little child who's being traumatized by you. You can take either position, you know. And so when these things are there, they are like unseen pratibandhakas. You don't know, but you don't feel good. You can't say, well, it's because I don't understand this clearly. You can't say that anymore. You know? In fact, Paramarthananda will say, you have a paroksha jnanam, because we can't really acknowledge paroksha jnana, this indirect knowledge, when it's being taught directly by the teacher and it is yourself. So it's not that it hasn't been taught as paroksha, and even in a sense received as a paroksha, right? But there's still something wrong. I don't feel like I have knowledge because I have all of this stuff inside. And so that stuff has to be taken care of. And then as that is taken care of, then how Paramarthananda will say it, the knowledge that's already there, you know, shines. The knowledge is already there. But there's pratibandhakas, internal pratibandhakas, obstructions that you can say are caused by the previous karma that caused you to be born in the situation that you're born in, and that situation had some difficulties. Now here we are. We are in Kali Yuga, you know. Kali Yuga is not an easy time to... No, I don't think any of the yugas are easy, actually. But in Kali Yuga, there's a lot of adharma, there's a lot of frustration, there's a lot of things that would be a lot better for children if they worked. In terms of the parents, in terms of the family structure, it would be much better for the children if these things work. But they don't really work anymore. The vast majority of young people, at least in the States, the little kids, you know, they have divorced parents once or twice. And so that's not easy for a child, you know. There's no strong structure, all of these things. There's no mom at home, you know. I know one little girl who her mom worked, as do most parents have to work. And her mom didn't work until she went to school, started school, right? But this little girl, she didn't want her mom to work when she was at school. She wanted her mom to be home, so that if anything happened and she had to come home for any reason, or she needed her mom for any reason, that her mom would be there. She was a smart little girl. She wasn't a little weirdo or anything. She was a very together little girl. But that's what she really wanted. She wanted her mom to be home, you know. I think it's cute. But it's also, I understand it, you know. She was a really good mom. That mom was a very mature, very, very good mom. And so the little girl had a good relationship with her mom. But then her mom was not there during the day. So then she didn't have access to that. You see what I mean? So we have all of these things. So even though that what we could say is that aparoksha jnanam is there without any doubts, without any misapprehension, still these problems are there. So what does the Shastra back in, you know, the 16th century and back in the Upanishads, what do they advise for that, since they see that, because the student themselves says, you know, I don't, something is wrong. What they say, and they'll say here as we go through it, you keep doing Shravana Manana Nididhyasana. You just keep doing that. And by doing that, you get a lot of punya. And that punya will help you to clear out all of these problems. And at some point, it will all be clear. That's basically what they say. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just going to say something before we go on. What is Swamiji, in the 70s, in the early 70s, from his vantage point, the Advaita Vedanta, taught as a pramana, that will take care of everything. Absolutely. You don't know any. If you have the mumukshutvam, mumukshutvam, everyone comes with, say, that this is the complete mumukshutvam over here, but everybody comes with something like in here. And so there's maturity that has to happen, but that will happen. The Vedanta itself, the Upanishads themselves, will give you that. That will take place, no problem. It will take place, you know. And as the mind matures, the knowledge becomes more clear. As the knowledge becomes more clear, the mind matures. And definitely everything that is needed will take place via the strength of the pramana. And he was absolutely, he had no doubt about it. And that, in fact, has always been the teaching until he met us, the Westerners. And now, but this is it is kind of funny, but you know. But now I have to say something about the Westerners he's talking about. He's talking about very serious people, not people who are just coming to, you know, sit around and have a nice time or something. People who are mumukshus, really serious people that he himself took seriously, and the students took seriously. They were not, they were mumukshus, and they were serious. But he recognized after some time that even though this knowledge was taking place in there, because the pramana was being wielded and the students were serious, you know, they didn't have anything really wrong, there wasn't something wrong, or, you know, where they weren't able to have the mental faculties to get this knowledge, they were fine. you know. But that aparokshajnanam, that ananda, that wholeness, the fullness, where you can say, ah, moksha, all is well with me, you know, was not taking place and not taking place. Even though the clarity seemed to be there, the question would be, but Swamiji, I don't feel full. I don't feel, you know. I don't feel like everything is okay. And so he heard this over in one way or another, over and over and over again for several years, you know, because I came like in 72, and I think there were a few other Westerners that Tim came, a couple came in 68, 69, or two or three. There's hardly any Westerners at all. And so the ones traveling, Swamiji students, were almost all Indian. And there was just a small handful of Westerners initially. I mean, it's not like now, but initially maybe there was, when at the biggest point of time, there was probably like seven or eight, maybe six or seven. And those were serious people. And so he started to really understand that, and for a while I was wondering what it was, you know. And then we used to talk about it, and then we introduced psychology. Some of us became introduced to psychology for one reason or another. I was introduced to Jung just by chance, and then I'd studied Jung for a long time and became a psychologist myself because I felt it was so important. But then he had another Indian who was a psychologist, another Canadian who was a psychologist, and then he really wanted to figure this out and understand what was happening. What were these pratibandhakas? What were these obstructions? Because he knew from his own teaching and from the way that the students were listening that that was not the problem. There's something else. And it's interesting here, that's indicated here, you know, that this what is as though parokshajnanam, it's not parokshajnanam. It's acting like it's paroksha jnanam because the moksha pala is not happening, right? Where I say all is well with me, everything that has to be done has been done, I am whole and complete to this extent that the ups and downs of the creation, the emotions that come and go, I don't expect anything, I don't expect them not to, it's fine. It's not like I expect all of a sudden that I have some delusional idea that now that I have knowledge, there's not going to be any thoughts floating around, or there won't be this emotion or that emotion. That's simply not true. But these thoughts and experiences that we have are just part of samsara, and they don't cover my knowledge in any way. That is jnana-nishtha. You know, so there's no reason to react or get really upset about these things, or if you do, you have to sit with them and let them pass. It's not like you feel like your knowledge has gone away or your wholeness or your own being has gone away. That's not going to be true at all. But here, so that's jnana-nishtha, that's aparoksha jnanam, you're finished. Because nothing can happen in the creation that can take yourself away. That's what that amounts to. So that's what we mean by the aparoksha jnanam. But then a person who's been taught with that teaching methodology and has clarity but still feels, you know, not whole, but not because of lack of clarity, but just because of the complexes inside, you know. Those things then need to be dealt with, and as those are dealt with, the aparoksha jnanam that is already there arises. So that's how Paramarthananda, embellished by me, talks about it. I thought it was really good of him to talk in that way. How are we doing? Okay, so those two verses. Now he's going to go into both the paroksha, more of a definition of paroksha and aparoksha. Let's see this verse 63.
Paroksham brahma vijnanam.
Shabdam deshika purvakam.
Shabdam deshika purvakam. Buddhi purvakritam papam.
Kritsnam dahati bandhivat.
Kritsnam dahati panivat.
Paroksham brahma vijnanam shabdam deshika purvakam. Buddhi purva kritam papam. Kritsnam dahati panivat. In the commentary here, says, at the intro, it says, Idanim paroksha jnanasya palam aha. Now he wants to tell, what is the pola? It's like an avantara, a secondary pola. What is the pola, the fruit of this gaining the paroksha jnanam before it becomes really aparoksha jnanam? What do I get out of the paroksha jnanam? So he says, the shabdam, you see the last half of the first sentence, the shabdam deshika purvakam. He says the shabdam is the teaching from the Shabda Pramana, which is what? It's the Mahavakya Tattvamasi. So the teaching of the Advaita Vedanta is the Mahavakya Tattvamasi, and all of the other statements are really in support of that, so that you have the clarity that Tattvamasi makes sense. But the teaching itself, the crest jewel of the teaching, exactly what's being conveyed is you are Ishwara. That's it, tat tvamasi. But there's a lot of knowledge that has to come in to support the tat, the tvamasi. So what he says is this, this teaching, which comes, deshika means the guru, deshika, purvakam, which comes really, where, as they say, guru mukhat labdham. It's something that is gained directly from the mouth of the teacher. Mm-hmm. Means the teaching is something that requires in the flesh as teacher-student relationship. Because something happens in that transmission, the student is there, the teacher is there. There's a knowledge that is taking place that actually both of you or the whole room is involved in. It's not just coming out of a book. It's something that happens between the teacher and student. And when that knowledge is happening, really neither the teacher is there nor the student. There's just that knowledge that is taking place. That means that pramana is working. You aren't there. The teacher is not there as though. The only focus is that jnanam itself. So here it says, this teaching that comes directly from the teacher, you know, gives a brahma vijnanam, gives the vijnanam, means that direct understanding of Brahman, but it's still paroksham. It really hasn't become aparoksham, but that teaching itself will turn into aparoksham, but now it's still paroksham. So it being paroksham, he says, what is the use of it? What happens with this paroksha jnanam? He says, this paroksha brahma vijnanam, that jnanam versus vijnanam. Vijnanam means there's a recognition that takes place. Jnanam has more. If I put these two together, jnanam, vijnanam, what is the difference? Jnanam is like theoretical knowledge. Vijnanam is like experiential knowledge. It's like the aparoksha jnanam is vijnanam. When I actually see what the teacher is talking about, that's vijnanam. Jnanam is I hear what the teacher is talking about. I'm listening. But that actual recognition is what we call vijnanam. So brahma vijnanam, which is still paroksha, but the teaching is being taught correctly. And so this the aparoksha, the pramanatvam of the teaching is taking place, and it's continually pointing your mind to that recognition. So it's not being taught in an indirect way. So there's an aparoksha jnanam there that has not yet quite been realized fully. So he says, this paroksha brahma vijnanam, taught directly by the teacher, through the mouth of the teacher, what's the use of it? He says, buddhi purva kritam papam kritsnam. Kritsnam means all. All of the papas which take place, purva kritam, which are done before buddhi, before knowledge. So see, you come to knowledge, then you have all of these agami karmas, all of these agami karmas that have come up to the time of knowledge, and they're all papas, all your papa karmas up to the time of knowledge. He says, dahati vannivat. They are totally burned. Yeah, just like, he says, vannivat, just like by a fire, they are totally burned. So this knowledge, of course, It does destroy the sanchitta and the agami karmas. It has to destroy them because yourself doesn't have any karma. You don't have any karma. You've never had any karma. You're non-dual conscious being. Where is there karma for you? And so those karmas require an identification with upadi. The upadi can have karmas, not you. Okay. So then he says, this paroksha brahmavijnanam shabdam deshika purvikam buddhi purva kritam papam krishnam gahati banyava. Just like a fire, all of these papas that you accrued before knowledge, all of those are gone. Why he says this? He says this because this paroksha and these things inside that are keeping this aparoksha and the things inside that are keeping the aparoksha as though paroksha by doing the shravana manana nididhyasana, these obstructions, these pratibandhas, these adrishta pratibandhas, because of the punya that you accrue from doing that, the blessing, the dharma, like the dharma, the cloud of dharma that we had in the previous verse, those impurities and those adrishta papas are something that you're released from. So here, all of the papa karmas that came up to the point of you gaining knowledge, as you gain clarity, those are all burned off. And so the pratibandhakas also that cause you to not be able to feel this knowledge, to know this knowledge, those are also taken care of. Just do an aside here. I'll do the last two verses in the next class. According to Jung, the psychology that we have now because we need it now. We've had it for 150 years or 200 years now. We have it. It came about because it was necessary. You know, because it's not like the unconscious was any longer flowing like an underground stream. It wasn't. There are too many of the human needs that we call archetypal needs. You know, fundamental needs to be of a human being are thwarted. And so that was causing a tremendous amount of unrest and agitation in the psyche and in the unconscious. And so something had to come about that could relieve that so that you could have some normalcy. You know, when the psyche became too full of unconscious agitations, we have to have a way to release that. And so when that's necessary, then we get that. So now we have the psychology. So you can consider that a gift from Bhagavan. You know, before that, there were all kinds of prakriyas and things that we do, different meditation techniques, yoga, you know, pranayama. So many things have been there for centuries, you know, that are extremely helpful. But we also needed this now, you know. And so you can say that with your prayers and your mumukshutvam, Bhagavan has promised you will get what you need, you know. You will get what you need. And so if what you need comes from an outside source, as though, if it comes from understanding how to do inner child work, for instance, or how to be with your feelings, all of these type of things that have now become pratibandhakas for us in a bigger way than they used to be. It's not like that. It's not like everybody. If you go back to the beginning of time, human beings have an unconscious. I mean, this is the blueprint of being a person. You have an unconscious. It just isn't so full of hurts. Because, say, if we go way back into the Satya Yuga, into the first Yuga, Kriti Yuga, all the way back. You know, they say the cow of Dharma, just as an example, is standing on four legs. And that means people are held within Dharma. And if they're held within Dharma, then their children are held within Dharma, you know. And so we don't have these types of trauma. The majority of the people, Sati Yuga, are held by Dharma. Dharma, imagine a cow on four legs. You can't just push it over, you know. So Dharma rules. And so then there's a lot of health there. A lot of psychological health. But what about in the next yuga when you lose one leg? the cow's now not, it's still kind of strong, but not really. It's only on three legs. That's in the second yuga. In the third yuga, it loses another leg. Now it's really wobbly. Poor thing. It has to lean against a wall or something. You know, it needs so much support. So that's going to be a problem for people trying to have a shanti within samsara. A level of shanti within samsara. A level of trust. A level of relaxation within samsara. It's not easy. But now we're on one leg. But the cow is on one leg. What do we do? How do we prop it up? You know? So we have to be very kind to ourselves and very helpful to others when we understand kind of the seriousness of the situation in terms of Dharma. Because that support system coming from the world is not here. Not really. We're just going into another phase of that degradation of Dharma. We're in an incredible phase right now. It's so shocking. So that means we have to, you know, they even say that in this Kali Yuga, really, if you're a mumukshu, you don't have to do much. Just chant Hare Krishna. Now, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Just chant that. And Bhagawan will give you everything you need to get this knowledge. Because you don't have the external supports. So we have to know about all of this and then give as much of that as we can to our children, you know, and to each other to really be able to keep kind of a sane sangha and let that sangha of sane, confident, dharmic people, you know, survive, live. We'll finish this afternoon.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.